Meow. 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 Woof. This is Freedom Fiends. I am Mr. Derek J, here to melt your medulla oblongata with molecular morsels of munchy mechanizations. Maybe my mouth must move more mobly, or maybe my mom made marmalade magpies. Either way, I'm here to inoculate you from indoctrination. Broadcasting from Podbay 2 Gay in the Liberty Media capital of the world, LRN.FM Studios. Joining me here to help warm your synapses this early morning is Chandler St. Pierre.
Well, good morning.
Hey, Chandler. Are you safe? Are you...
That was quite a mouthful.
Yes.
I am safe.
Yes, it was. And have you been contacted by the government?
No, no government for me.
All right. Any friendly kitties along your talk box over there?
Well, the friendly old man kitty is sitting in my lap right now, content. We'll see if we can keep him here instead of walking all over the keyboards and
That's everything. Cool. I'm wearing a kitty sweatshirt today. It's a very special one. The kitty is all I don't know what the kind of material it's called, but it's like screen printed on or whatever, where it's like right through the fabric. And the cat, it's in black and white in very high res, and the cat has sunglasses on that have the cosmos in them. Very
awesome.
Very cool. I saw it at a thrift store and had to pick it up. You know, last week or the week before, we were chatting, and I got a bad rap for being, like, anti-animal. And I felt like I had to explain that a little bit. So, first of all, you have pets. You have kitties.
Way too many.
And you're a fan. You like pets and animals and living around them, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't, and I know there must be others out there like me, but I heard a lot of hate when I expressed a few weeks ago that, like, I find dogs and pets to be unnecessary. What say you?
Well, let me ask you this. Do you, is it, like, a physical thing? Do your eyes water? Do you sneeze? Do you, you know, is it that sort of thing?
Yeah, it can be. With cats, I'm allergic to cats. I think they're cute. Like, I told you, I'm wearing a cat right now. I want to look cute, so I'm wearing a cat. So I'm for that, but I don't want a cat in my life. That sounds like...
Yeah.
It sounds like you got to take care of it. You got to take it to the vet. You know, all for just, like, oh, nice pets and cuddles. Nah.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose there's a lot of upkeep to having animals and caring for them properly. Dogs more so. I mean, I have two cats and a dog, and I love all my animals, but boy, I'll tell you, my dog is kind of a pain sometimes. She's actually been really good the last 2 days. I'm kind of wondering what's going on, if she's not hatching some evil plan, because she's been so good.
It's such a trade-off, like with animals. Like, there's always something else that your money would be going towards, you know, either your car or your clothes or your condition in life in some other way. So you're really buying that love for a little while, buying that love from that animal, and, yeah. You know, whatever. It's not for me. Maybe it will be in future days. Maybe I'll feel like that's worth it sometime, but not right now.
I've always wanted pets and liked having pets around, dogs, Ugh. Cats. I've always had them. I don't know. It's something with me. There's something about coming home and... You know, I mean, I'm a single person, and granted, my kid may, you know, say, hey, what's up, Dad, when I come in, but, you know, usually she's in her room doing her thing, but I can usually count on at least one of the cats, if not both of them, coming to the door, and my dog even, too,
although yeah.
Sometimes she can't be troubled to do anything but look up from her spot on the couch when I come in. You know, they acknowledge you and everything. And the
Are your
money
pets
thing,
prisoners? Are they prisoners
No.
in your home? Do they roam?
No.
Do they go outside?
The dog does. The cats don't. And actually, my kitty Scratchy that's sitting in my lap now, he's 10 or so. He gets freaked out when I take him outside. But the kitten really wants to go out. We've taken her out a couple of times. I think this summer we let her roam around the yard. I posted some pictures to Facebook. She was just loving it. And, you know, we might let her be an outdoor cat. There's definitely more to be aware of when you have an indoor-outdoor animal. But, you know, yeah, it's all right. And the money thing isn't too bad, assuming, you know, you don't get stuck with huge vet bills, which does happen from time to time. But other than that, it's not an issue. But the thing,
animals can live on scraps, too. So it's not that essential that you're spending that much money on them. I just feel like probably the time is the number one life suck. Like, if it's necessary to, if you have a cat, wipe away some of the dander or whatever that gets on your clothes. Like, I see this with dog people, too. Like, oh, we have a dog at home, and, like, they'll sit down on one piece of furniture, and then you get up, or say you're all wearing all black. It's all over your clothes. It's all over everything. You know? You have to take all the time.
Oh, I totally do know, because I have a white-haired dog, and my wardrobe primarily consists of black clothes.
Yeah.
So, I know all about that. You get used to it, I guess. I mean, sometimes it irritates me, but I'm so used to it now. The big thing, you know, and for somebody like you, you know, you're young and you're hip, you're working and you're out doing activism and stuff, so you're probably not home a lot. And when you travel, that can be, you know, it's not an inconvenience when you have pets, but you have to make extra preparations.
Yeah, that's another thing. Pet people trying to bring their dogs into places. Like, oh, it's a little dog, I'll just bring it in. It's like, no, sorry, your rat is huge, and no one else needs to see it walking around in your purse or whatever. Like, sometimes people will just have their dog walking around right in a restaurant or something. Like, oh, well, you know, it's no big deal. It's just my dog. I bring it everywhere. Anyway, how did we get here? Well, I want to know, we're going to do a little bit of a different Fiends episode tonight. I want to interview you, Chandler. I'm going to learn a little. We're going to dig deep and let the Fiends listeners really know who both of us are. So, you know, we could get back to pets and stuff. I think a lot of people can relate to that. But I wanted to begin here with our earliest memories and sort of how you came to Liberty. I don't think we ever really had that discussion, Chandler. And I'd be fascinated to know. But before we get there, we have to begin with the earliest memories. First of all, do you remember what you did yesterday? Then we'll go to earliest memories.
No yesterday.
No. Yeah, but okay. Any more luck with like 10, 20 years ago? How old are you, by the way?
Yeah.
You're like 50, 55?
No.
I'm joking. All right. Not how old are you?
Let's see, 77.
You sound like 400 years old.
37. Well, it takes me a minute to figure it out. I forget. I don't keep track of that stuff.
That's a real thing, people forgetting their ages. My mom always said, she forgets her age. And I thought that was a lie for the longest time. But then once you start getting up there in numbers, like, it could be easy to forget.
Yeah.
You actually have to do math.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. Why keep track after a while? You know, I guess it's that whole age is a state of mind thing, right?
Yeah. So where did you land on Earth when you landed here? When you were dropped off by space aliens?
They dropped me off in, I guess it was just Augusta General, you know, the town I live in. I haven't strayed.
Are you still
too
there?
Far from home. Yeah, I'm still here.
Wow. All right, good place.
Did my sound drop off?
No, I mean, you're still in the place where you were dropped by aliens.
Yeah, I haven't strayed that much. You know, I lived in Florida for a year, and I've moved around a couple of cities around here, but I like the area, so I've stayed.
Okay.
How about
good
you?
People.
Where did you land?
I landed in Philly area, Philadelphia, on the Jersey side. Because Philadelphia is like on a river, on the Delaware River, in the little pinch between Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And I'm there, and I dig it. I dig that area. It's cool. It's got like an urban meets suburban clash thing going on. You know, as cities do, they'll like spill out into the outside neighborhoods. And I was sort of scooped up as a part of that. And no, I had to get out of there, though. As much as I loved it, I lived there for a little while and was like, oh, let me see what the rest of the world is like. And the rest of the world, not as good, gotta say. You know, I've been like I've been to lots of other places. Went to China, thought that was pretty nice and cool. Milan and France, and it was nice to leave the country and see other places. But like, I guess that's what gives you the appreciation from where you're from. Because, like, maybe I'm wrong about this, but they just like where you're from. Like, even if you're from a swamp or from, you know, some snowy tundra, you go around the world and then you're like, oh, I love my frozen tundra. It's home. It's comfy. And so, like, I love my post-apocalyptic wasteland of Philadelphia. It's wonderful and dirty. And, you know, I miss it when I'm away.
Well, I think no matter where you are, you have that sense of being comfortable. If you're one of those people that was born and grew up in a certain area.
Yeah. My earliest memory, though, is looking at the refrigerator. I'll say that. I remember that. I think that was the first thing I ever remember was like falling down on my butt as a young toddler, staring up at the refrigerator, like looking at what must have been scribblings that I had done on sheets of paper, like crayon or something. I just remember that real vividly, looking up at the refrigerator. And I would have only been able to look up at a refrigerator if I was very young, like maybe two or three. But there's nothing more to that. There's no story. It's just like, you know, general toddler story, looking up at the world.
Well, I've been thinking about this a lot because, you know, I'm trying to think of my first memory, and I've had a hard time pegging this one.
Really?
And I have, and I've talked to my dad about it, and I still haven't gotten a satisfactory answer. So I don't know if this is a memory or if it's just some weird childhood imagination thing.
Yeah.
But when I was, I think, a year old, my dad had moved out to Seattle, and I seem to remember sitting on the edge of like a helicopter and going for a helicopter ride and seeing the Space Needle. So I don't know.
Space Needle for Freedom. Hey, we'll be right back.
Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow!
Meow.
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 Space Needles to Freedom. Isn't that what you were talking about just a moment ago, Chandler St. Pierre?
It is, and that's why I always knew I was an alien.
What? Because you were dropped into a space needle?
Yeah.
Wow. Hey, well, I talked about my earliest memory. We're going back to as early as we can remember, and I have to cheat a little bit and tell you a story from that someone else told me. This is something relayed to me from my mom and my aunt, who said that this happened when I was very young, and I have no reason not to believe them. They were in a fret. So I used to hang out with my cousin a lot. We lived up next door to each other in houses that were adjacent. That was pretty cool, growing up with a cousin. She was about my age, and we would get into little bits of mayhem together. And one day, we decided, I don't know why, that we were going to fill up all of the bowls and cups of water in the house with water and just move, you know, just fill them all up. No reason not to, I guess. So, you know, that's what we decided we were going to do. We're about, like, I don't know, two or three in that ballpark. And so this is a like a weird thing for kids to do. Not totally unsafe, but the way we were doing it was very unsafe. I don't know why at the moment we were unsupervised. And our moms were off on the like neighbor's porch smoking cigarettes or something. And
sounds about right.
Yeah, you know. So they come home, they come walking in, and I'm standing there on the sink in my bare feet in like a diaper, holding the sprayer hose from the sink, you know, and water's on full blast, and I'm handing down this cup, like with one hand I've got the sprayer, with the other I've got this cup filled with water that I'm handing down to my cousin, and she's placing them down on the floor. So we've made like this an array of filled up bowls and glasses all over the floor. There's not a space in the room to walk. So my mom walks in, completely freezes, like, because if she makes any sudden movements, I mean, I could slip, I could get scared, I could fall off the counter and, like, break my neck or something. And I'm surrounded by glass and water, and I'm in a high place. So it's like, what a terrifying, you know, like, don't leave kids alone, because, like, this stuff will happen. They'll just do the worst possible thing. I don't know why I decided that's what I was going to do. Huh?
That's why we want a camera handy for moments like that.
She should have had a camera. That was my first memory, because I sort of remember that. We didn't get in trouble or anything. It was, you know, it was their fault. They shouldn't have been keeping an eye out. They should have been looking, paying more attention.
Well, I have a couple of memories. I mean, I remember age three, four, one of the ones I remember is we used to live in a trailer when I was really young, I think about three or four. And my dad had this weird couch that, I don't know, it had this like faux Indian looking type fabric.
Cool.
And he had a coffee table. And I used to stack pillows from the coffee table to the couch and make these little tunnels. And they were like my little caves. Yeah, you know, like lay them across.
Like you'd make a fort.
Yeah. And, you know, I'd explore these caves because I was a real little kid when I was little. I don't know how I got
caves. They're caves. I love that with the imaginations of kids. You're like, I have a stack of pillows. Instantly, caves. I'm exploring.
Well, yeah. And when you're a single child and you spend a lot of time alone, which I did growing up, your imagination goes wild.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, I remember doing stuff like that, and the trailer had a back door, and I used to sit out the back door because it was facing the forest.
Was it on wheels, this trailer that we're talking about?
I don't think so. I think it was on a slab. But yeah, man, I used to just like gaze out at the woods and look at picture books and look at the woods some more. So I was always kind of a nature guy, you know.
Just what was it? What was it like when you came out to your parents as straight?
Unsurprising.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Meow! Meow!
Meow!
Meow!
Meow!
Hey, Puddin' Pie, you're the one who's eating all that pie over there for Pie Day, Chandler.
Yeah.
You had a fun pie weekend?
I did.
Did you go?
I didn't eat as much.
Did you make some pies?
Did I make a pie? I made the best pie.
Oh, tell me. Did you make your own crust?
No, I'm not that fancy. I go out and buy the unrollable. But no, actually, it's kind of funny because the pie I made, I got the recipe. I've told you before what I do for a living, working with individuals with disabilities. And one of the things we used to do with these guys was look up recipes and help them cook stuff.
Sorry to interrupt your story, but is individuals with disabilities the most PC way to say that? I think it is.
Yeah, is that, it is.
Okay. Was that a determination made by the PC police? Like, this is how we're going to say it now?
Don't even get me started on that, man, because I will rail for the whole show on that one.
You know, like, I always want to be as politically correct as I can be. You know,
not me.
Well, whoever this board is who determines what things we are and are not allowed to say are very intelligent, and they always have it right, and they never mess up. So I always want to just follow what they say. So
the whole idea is you're supposed to put the individual first, and it's not their disabilities don't define them, which I do agree with totally.
Yes,
but you know when it's I started
getting awfully
out in
long
the field,
though. It's getting awfully yeah, long. To
when
say.
I started out in the field 18 years ago, we used to just say our clients. Because they were clients of ours in that respect. We provided services to them.
Client is respectable.
Well,
like celebrities are clients of their agents. Like if Beyonce can be a client, then you know anyone can be a client and think that's okay.
It's just ridiculous. But anyway.
All right. So, sorry about that, derailment. But
we're cooking, right? And we look up this recipe for cream cheese chicken pot pie, and we made it, and it was pretty good.
Oh, what? Yum.
Yeah,
that sounds good. Like combining
that has become like my pie recipe that I make, and basically you take cream of chicken soup, and you can take canned chicken or regular chicken, ground it up, whatever, you know, chop it up. Don't ground it up; that would make it too mushy. And a bag of mixed vegetables, you know, that has peas, carrots, and string beans.
Can I use a bag of chips instead? Work?
I suppose you could. I don't see why not. You can be inventive and creative, right?
Yeah.
I know how you take the vegetables, the chicken, the cream of chicken soup, and then you add a stick of cream cheese, which is what makes the pie. And oh my God, it is just delicious. It is so good. And you really can't eat a lot of it because it's so rich, you know, it'll fill you up.
Is there any kind of comparison that you could give it to like a food that I would recognize? Like, I guess. Like, that sounds to me kind of like what shepherd's pie is. Shepherd's pie is. Like,
it's not even close.
No. Okay. I'm wrong. What is it close to?
Because
pies vary. They're so different.
It's very individual. That's probably why I like it. I can't really think of anything it compares to. Because I'm not a big pie person, to be honest with you. Sweet, you know, like dessert pies or, like, growing up, another memory. We used to have what was called touche pie, and if you're French, I'm sure you've had that.
What is that?
It's meat pie.
Oh. It sounds
like
bad.
Ground meat in a pie. It's not my favorite. And
in
a
pie? Surprise! It's ground meat.
Yeah.
Wait, do you...
I got many dirty looks yesterday when I said that I didn't like touche pie, because there's a lot of French people
there. Oh, is that
a
popular thing?
Yeah, here it is.
Hey, here's the real question. Pizza pie, is it a pie?
Yeah, it can be.
No. See, that's the wrong answer. It's not a pie. It's a class of its own. Pizza pie is... Like, when I think pie, I think apple pie, cherry pie, all right? It's got a look to it, you know? And you can have lemon meringue pie and throw in some variations like key lime pie and get all excited about different kinds of arrangements here. But when we start talking about pizza... And putting it in the same category as an apple pie, you've got to be kidding me. These two are completely different things. They don't get the same name.
Speaking of apple pies, there was two different kinds yesterday.
What was the best one? Wonderful. I was asking you about pudding pie, and I was joking, but you
I
said
told
there was
you
like
what
a,
the best one
a thin
was.
Mint. Yours was the best.
Yeah.
Okay.
And for dessert, it was probably a tie. There was a thin mint pie, which kind of reminded me of cookies and cream ice cream. It was like the Oreo crust, with, I don't know how they made the Thin Mints into it, honestly. And it was like a, almost like a whipped cream pie. It was super yummy. And then the other one was a strawberry rhubarb pie.
Yum. Wow. Oh. Somebody pat themselves on the back for making those. Or did they? Were they store-bought?
No, these were all, we all made them.
Wow. Good job, everybody.
There was no store-bought.
You rock.
Yeah.
Hey, did we bury the lead here? Why were you eating all these pies?
Because yesterday was pie day.
Yay!
Know, like 3-1-4, so on and so forth.
And it was kind of a special one, too, right? Because it's 3-1-4-1-5. And so that's how the date is arranged, you know, for people in the States.
Right.
And that's the number,
right,
as I understand it. I haven't.
Yeah,
I haven't
and
memorized.
I had never even heard of this thing till yesterday. Like my friend that planned it, you know, she did like the Facebook event and invited all these people and stuff. And like we used to get together and cook food. Although our ritual was margarita night, where we would make a big meal. All the ladies would make this yummy meal, and I would make yummy margaritas for after the meal. So, you know, I just figured she wanted to have pie and she called it pie day. I didn't understand till like yesterday that, you know, there was some significance to the name and the date. But yeah, either way, it was fantastic. There was probably, 13, 14 different pies, you know. And
pie
so
day,
we just cut up little slivers and sampled them all, and yes, it was
little
wonderful
slivers. You were polite about it. You were not Garfield taking pie for yourself.
Well, it was funny too because a lot more people showed up than I knew were coming, and there was like actually pie left over. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, well, you make 15. There's going to be plenty for everybody, you know.
Well, there's certain ones, you know.
When I was a kid, Pi Day was a math thing. For our math classes, we would have sort of a special holiday, and people would be able to, I think the idea was in, like, bring whatever you want so long as it's round and you can share it with the class. So even, like, M&Ms counted and stuff, and it was like, it got pretty weird like that.
Yeah.
Hey, you got your cat joining us. I hear that purring.
Yes, that was Kitty.
And Kitty is the name of your cat?
No, his name is Scratchy. He's my baby boy.
Okay. Wow.
But
a heck of a purr he's got on him.
Oh, yeah. He gets going, man. I'll tell you.
What a motor.
He's got bees in the belly.
Okay. So,
memories. I had another one.
Well, I asked you, what was it like coming out to your parents as straight? And I meant that half-jokingly, but, like, did you ever do that?
No, but I have a funny story about that, right? So, my dad's gay, right? And
oh, wow. There you go.
I remember I must have been 13, and my dad sits me down at the table. And he's like, I have something to talk to you about.
Uh-oh. What were you
and
thinking
like, oh,
this was going to be?
And,
like,
well,
am I in trouble?
You know, yeah, exactly. I figured the school called and, you know, they reported me being myself, which is rambunctious or whatever.
Yeah.
And so he said, I don't even remember how
Chandler's
he, like,
chopping
started
wood at recess.
Yeah, and I wasn't that. I'm
imagining what your complaints were as a kid. What reasons did the principal call your parents?
Oh, so many. So many.
Chandler's inventing a grill.
Yeah.
It's rocket propelled.
Very rambunctious.
All right. So
my dad sits me down, right?
Yeah.
And I don't even remember how the conversation started, but he's like leading up to it.
Where was this, by the way? Was this like kitchen table sit down?
This was our dining room table.
So this is like
heavy. Sitting down in the dining room.
This is like room dampened volume and everything. This is like, we're going to have a serious conversation right now.
Yeah, and you know, I'm like, oh my god. So then he starts leading up to it, and I don't even remember like the whole conversation. But he comes out, and he's like, "Just so you know, I'm gay," and I busted out laughing. And
whoa.
I think he was kind of offended.
Yeah,
and he's like, "What's so funny?" And I'm like, "Dad, come on. You know, I've lived with you for 13 years. Did you think I didn't know?"
What? And you did know?
And of course I knew.
But how'd you know? If he didn't tell you.
It's just one of those things.
Did
you
live with a mom, too? Did you ever
Well, I would, like, go to see my mom on the weekends and stuff, you know.
So your parents were divorced?
Yeah, oh, yeah. My parents divorced when I was like, I think it was one and a half, maybe.
Aww.
Obviously for, you know,
little
the reason.
Baby Chandler a hug.
Yeah.
Obviously for the what? The reason that your dad is gay?
Yeah, you know. So, the gays, I mean, it was no big... It was no big surprise to me, and it was no... I didn't care. I mean,
so you knew.
You know, whatever. Who,
how did you know? Was it your friends? Did your friends, like, pick on you and say, like, your dad's gay?
Oh, yes.
So they would say that, and this was before
my
your
my friends... I wouldn't even call them friends, but growing up, I never really... Like, I guess people have stereotypes of gay people, and I never had that sort of thing growing up.
Yeah,
but I guess my dad fit one of them or whatever, because I used to get teased a lot.
What, the Mr.
And I
Mom
never paid
stereotype?
Attention to it. Huh?
What, the Mr. Mom stereotype?
I guess. I don't even know, man. You know how kids are. They're really foolish sometimes.
If you could compare your dad to one gay celebrity, who would it be?
I don't really know any gay celebrities.
Oh, come on.
Keep up with... Like, I don't know. I mean, my dad's my dad.
Yeah, I guess they are separate. He's his own.
Yeah,
individual.
You know, I don't... And I never thought of my dad... Like, I know that there's that stereotype of flamboyant gay people or whatever.
Of course.
I never really saw it with my dad.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, I'm learning that there's all different kinds of gays.
But I grew up around that sort of thing. You know, I grew up... Like, I live near Hollowell, Maine, which is famous for two things. Well, three things. Bars, antique stores, and gay people.
Well, where there are antique stores, there will be gay people.
I mean, that's literally all Hollowell is. And, you know, my mom lived in Hollowell, and I grew up around Hollowell. So that sort of thing was, like, normal to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. I dig that.
But I remember...
So you laughed at him. Wait a minute. Don't go away from that. I want to know what happened. You laughed at him. He was offended. And then what was the rest of this conversation like? You said, I know.
He was just... Well, he was like,
all right, that's
he
it.
He asked me. And
class dismissed.
Yeah.
I'm gay and that's it, Chandler. Well, I'm gay too. I want to tell you my story.
Okay.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends. And I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech as hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Mr. Derek J. So, here. Yeah, what's up, Chandler?
I got to get to my box story. This is instrumental.
Please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. So, when I was a kid, right, I used to watch Batman, the old one with Adam West.
Batman. That one.
Which is a side note. I think that Adam West is the best character on Family Guy. He's what makes the show.
Okay.
But anyway.
All right.
And that so was all you know,
camp,
in the old Batman,
it was all camp humor, right? It was like
it was like
a comedy
campy.
Batman.
Yeah, it was not the Dark Knight. Let's put it that way.
You wore dark tights.
That's well, I didn't have any tights. I probably would have worn them if I had them. And I did wear capes, though, when I was a kid. I had a big thing for capes.
So you dressed up as Batman?
No, but I liked capes. I mean, my two favorite superheroes growing up were Spider-Man and Batman.
So were your capes like my capes, like towels from the bathroom that you just wrapped around your neck?
Yes, that's exactly what they were. Yeah. I tried to get black ones, but, you know, we didn't have any. We had, like, multicolored towels.
Right. You just go with what you got.
Right. So I just had to pretend. So when I was a kid, I watched Batman, and, you know, they had, like, the whole, he flipped the head of the statue up and pushed the button, and the bookcase flipped back, and he went down the bat poles to the bat cave. And, you know, he had all the computers and all that stuff. So, for some reason, my grandmother used to have a lot of boxes. Oh, and that's another thing. I spent a lot of time with my grandmother. She kind of helped raise me.
Why is that?
So, she's a big part of who I am. Being an old French Catholic woman, she was tough as nails, too. She was great.
Why was Grams around a lot? And what'd you call her? Grams?
Meme.
Meme, because she's French?
Yes. Well, okay. Ma mère actually means my mother in French.
Yeah.
But, you know, we always just said mémé.
Okay.
Which, I don't know, it's like French-Canadian slang. So, I used to set up, I'd get these boxes, and I'd get crayons or chalk.
You're talking cardboard boxes.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, like...
I dig.
For bananas and whatever else.
Okay.
I tried to get the blank ones. And, I draw bookcase on one side, and then on the other side I draw like computers, you know, all these fancy buttons and knobs and sliders and whatever. And you know, I'd sit down, pretend I'm Bruce Wayne 1 minute, and then I'd flip the switch and I'd turn all the boxes around manually.
Whoa.
And I was in the Batcave with all the computers, you know. So I mean, that's the kind of stuff we did when we were kids, you know.
Good imagination.
Yeah. So that was it. Like the whole video games thing, that didn't come in until much later. So it was, if you were stuck in the house on a rainy day, you were playing with boxes, you know, pretending to be Batman or whatever. And if you were outside, you were in the backyard, I don't know, doing whatever, pretending you were a knight and, you know, on a quest or, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, I like to believe I have a super powerful imagination because I can envision a world without governments and living in libertarian paradise one day. But I am amazed. Well,
I think that's kind of like my point with all this. Having that imagination enables you to, as you grow older and you get to where you and I have gotten to in embracing liberty, you can see beyond the current systems and the current structure, and it's not so much of a stretch.
Yeah. Well, you know, I only brought that up because I was recently playing pretend with a young girl. She's a daughter of a couple of friends of mine. And, you know, she was around... She wanted to, I forget what the game is. You know how kids will like just make up a game while they're there and, you know, you're running from something or you're playing tag or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
And they'll guide you, you know, with their own little secrets like, oh, that's the bad guy. We have to navigate around him or her, the like sleeping person, not wake them up, you know, and go to the kitchen without being noticed. And then, you know.
I love it.
Yeah, yeah. I like hanging out with kids. Who have imaginations like that, and they want to like exercise the mind. I think that is a really good sign for the future.
And, it is.
Well, we didn't get to a gay story. I've got one where I tell my parents I'm gay.
Oh, yes, we must hear that.
That was good. It was good for freedom and for peace. I hope all kids have a nice, easy time with that. It's getting easier every year. There are safe places for them in schools and outside of schools. And do you ever play hooky?
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do! Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Meow.
A meow.
Meows. Worms, worms, worms. Meow, meow.
Beware the meow of worms.
Meow, meow, meow.
I can feel it, brother.
Meow! Yeah. Worms. All right. Melting your medulla oblongata with molecular morsels of munchy mechanizations. Hey, we're back. It's the Freedom Fiends. Mr. Jerick J here with you, rejoined by Chandler St. Pierre. Are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
I'm so safe and happy to report there's no government contact.
Whew. That's a relief.
Yep.
So you were telling me over the trip to the free market that you modded your iPod. That is pretty cool. And now now you're enjoying 256 gigabytes of content. Is it just audio content or any video on there?
I actually put not this past year, the year before, 2013, I put both of Ben Stone's Porkfest presentations because Red Pill Recordings recorded them and released some excellent video. So I put those on there.
It is terrific.
And I think I put an Alice Cooper concert on there, video. All the rest of it's audio.
So what do you like about having an old school iPod with all of your new content on it?
Well, the old school, I have an iPod Classic, which is discontinued, and the reason
it's
bought
the black
it is
and
because,
white thing, right? Or it's blue and
mine
blue
is
and white.
Gray with the silver backing, the chrome backing.
Yeah.
And I bought it because it had 160 gigabyte capacity. After format, it's like 138 or whatever. And you know, I have a lot of music. I've told you before, I'm a real tech guy, lots of computers. I have lots of audio, spoken word, comedy, music, podcasts, you name it, I've got it. I have multiple hard drives full of that stuff from years and years of computer ownership. So, you know, when my iPod died, the hard drive failed, I was severely depressed because I carry my iPod with me everywhere. I don't listen to the radio. Ever.
You were depressed? Like, you got emotional, like, I'm waking up, I don't want to get out of bed, I don't have my iPod.
Yeah, it's sad. But, well, I've often said that the two greatest inventions of the 20th century are the Kindle and the iPod, because with the Kindle, I can have thousands of books at my fingertips to read, which I do. I carry my Kindle and my iPod with me every day.
Yeah,
and, you know, the iPod
Kindle
you can have.
Ruined libraries for me. Like, I always had some romanticism about just seeing streams of books as far as the eye could see. You know, oh, look at all those books. I'll never read all those. You know, and then they look so classy, like, oh, maybe I'll have my picture painted one day in front of a library, like with books and, you know, bookshelves.
Oh, I still love
lots
libraries,
of fancy
man.
Leather-bound things with gold fringes. And then now, like the Kindle, it's one little object that you hold that could fit on a bookshelf, and there'd be tons of extra space for knickknacks and whatever else. So the Kindle, well, I resent a little bit for ruining the majesty of books for me.
I don't know, man. It's kind of funny because I was talking to Michael about this one night, and because he was telling me how his wife loves her Kindle. And I love my Kindle. And I'm going to be publishing a book soon, hopefully, if I can get my stuff together. A book of poetry and thoughts and rants and ramblings and that sort of thing. And I'm going to do it to Amazon Kindle first, but I'd like to get a paperback version published eventually. And for me, like, right now I'm reading the Game of Thrones series, A Song of Fire and Ice, I believe it's called.
Okay.
And I love that on my Kindle. You know, it's great. But when I read poetry, I can't read it on a Kindle.
Why?
I don't really know what it is. I can't even read it on a computer, like electronically. It drives me nuts. Like, I think I have all of Charles Bukowski's books, or most of them. And
he's the guy who wrote such films as Adaptation.
Well, he did. They did a screenplay and a movie based on his movie, on his book. I don't remember what the book was called, but the movie was Barfly with Mickey Rourke. Really great movie. And but he's kind of the sad drunk poet type, you know, from the 60s, 70s, 80s. He's
Is that you?
From time to time, it can be. I don't have near his skill for stating what he observes, but I'm learning. But I really like his stuff. There's just something about him that I really like. And, you know, I downloaded all his stuff to my computer first when I first discovered him. And I started reading. And I can't do the poetry thing on a computer or a Kindle. So I went out and went on a quest, you know, used bookstores, libraries, got on Amazon and looked for actual physical copies. And I've got a lot of his books now, most of them. And the same thing with, like, I'm blanking. The guy who wrote Walden.
Thoreau.
And Keats and D.H. Lawrence and that sort of thing. So I've kind of gone to all the used bookstores and wherever, even Barnes & Noble's, because that's the only bookstore we have in my town, which is really sad. But, and I, you know, I'm getting the actual physical copies. So Kindle hasn't quite ruined it for me. You know, it's good for big novels that are like 1,000 pages. You know, who wants to carry one of those around when you're at the gym on the treadmill?
Yeah, is good for that, saving space. Can you use it for other things too? Can you get like magazines on a Kindle?
I'm sure you can. I have like the Kindle, I don't even know what it's called. It's the old one that's just black and white.
Yeah, and it looks like paper when it's on, yes. Right? That is pretty cool.
It's called the e-ink, and it's as close to a book for electronic devices you can get. I can't do backlit screens like on a cell phone or, you know, a tablet, an iPad, or even the Kindle Fires or the Nooks.
You don't want all that energy blasting your eyeballs when you're trying to read a book.
Yeah, exactly. It kind of negates the point, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't know. I kind of subscribe to the theory of the whole electromagnetic radiation kind of disrupting our natural patterns. I know if any of you guys out there watch Better Call Saul, one of the characters, he's really struggles with that. And I actually do believe that's a thing.
Twilight Zone.
Call it conspiracy theory if you want, but I don't know, man. There's a lot of evidence to suggest that it's disruptive, to say the least.
It's disruptive. And an adjective, like I said, that I'll never have to define. So I guess that means something.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm a tech guy. I like my computers. I like my Wi-Fi. I like my cell phone.
So what's disruptive mean? What's disruptive about these EMT signals that I should be concerned
think about it this way, right? You've been to Porkfest.
Yeah. Porkfest, of course, is the Porcupine Freedom Festival, a festival that happens once every year in the White Mountains of New Hampshire, where hippies and techies and people from all walks of life gather to celebrate freedom for a week.
Hippies with guns, man.
Yeah, it is probably the closest thing that I would say for me to heaven on earth. It's
so amazing.
Yeah, it's open land area where I feel safe, and there's lots of other people who are into freedom in the sense that they like to have their property respected and respect other people. Like, we were talking about animals earlier today, and I'm sorry to go on this, like, tirade here, but we were talking about animals at the beginning of the show, and how I don't like animals, but porcupines are the, like, spirit animal of libertarians, and they're the theme of this Porcupine Freedom Festival. And it embodies that I just want to do my thing, party, and be left alone. Like, don't try and attack a porcupine. It's not going to work out. So anyway, that's Porkfest. And what about it?
Okay, so one of the things, you know, you said it's heaven on earth, and I would agree.
Yeah.
So we think in terms, when we say that, we think in terms of, you know, it's freedom, it's liberty, it's voluntary cooperation, interaction, which is true.
Yeah.
But what about once you get over the whole, oh, there's no Wi-Fi out here, or, oh, my cell phone signal stinks out here. Once you get past that, right, and you can't log on to Facebook and Twitter and the news sites and all that, like, every 2 seconds.
You actually can. Once you get past that. There are people who provide those services for Bitcoin, which is pretty cool.
Yes, there are. But once you get past that and you kind of remove yourself from that and you're not bombarded by all these electronics and you're just kind of, you know, in your tent or, well, I think there's a hotel on premises.
But, you know, you most better of us believe there is, because I am not staying in any tent. So,
man.
I am surrounded by my electronics at all times, day and night.
I don't know, man. I got to tell you, it's kind of freeing, and it feels good to because we're 50 days a year. We're surrounded by this stuff, and we take a week or a week and a half, whatever, off and kind of disconnect a little bit. And it feels really good. Like, I remember last year, I think it was the night of the big gay dance party.
Woo!
You know, I went down there for a little while and socialized or whatever. I had a few drinks and I came back to my site and I started a fire and I sat by the fire and just kind of chilled out under the stars. And I was going to crawl in my tent and I was like, you know what? It's really nice out here. And I just brought my sleeping bag and my pillow out and put it in front of the fire. And just kind of laid down and watched the fire and fell asleep. And I slept so good, like on a hard ground. And I'm kind of I'm spoiled. You know, I got a $600 memory foam mattress.
Wow.
And, you know, I just slept out on the ground.
So camping for you is not really like roughing it. I mean,
at home I do.
Oh, I see. All right. All right.
At home.
I thought you brought your memory foam with you.
No. See, and that's the thing. Like, I just kind of plopped down on the ground with my sleeping bag, and I actually slept really good.
Just you and nature.
Good in the morning.
And the stars above. Porkfest is one of the best times to see the sky. I have never seen more stars in my life than being surrounded at Porkfest.
After we got over the rain, the sky was really clear, and you could see the stars really well.
You mentioned the Big Gay Dance Party, too. This is the final year of the Big Gay Dance Party at Porkfest, and there are always more straight people than gay people there.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow, 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 meow.
Meow, 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 meow.
Whoa.
Meow. I heard a dog.
Meow. Meow. Freedom Fiends. Some of them are gay.
some people are gay.
So tell us your story, brother. I know you've been itching to.
Yeah. So you've got your gay dad and your gay kid, and I want to be gay, too. So here's my story. But you're straight, for the record. We're having we're having this blind date across the radio. Totally not interested. I mean, in romance. So what's the story? It's difficult to say, like, coming out to your parents is a hard thing to do. I'll just get right out to it. I talked with one of my friends about it first, because I thought about, like, you're raised to be straight when you watch TV shows growing up. There's, you know, your favorite characters have their romantic relationships, and all of those are straight. So, growing up, you know how kids will ask you, maybe it was like this for you too, Chandler, where other kids in your grade will be like, so who do you like? You know, like, they'll pull you aside at the lunch table or at recess or whatever, and they'll, like, ask, who do you like? And they'll want to talk about who they like, and you know, kid crushes and stuff. Like, you have your first boyfriend, girlfriend in elementary school and stuff like that. And for me, it was always like, I don't like anybody. I don't really like any of the girls in our grade. And I never could figure out that was maybe a clue. until, let's see, I guess I was like 13 when one day in the car, I came out to my mom. And I said, I forget if she was like, she was asking me if I'm dating one of my friends. Like, I came over from my friend's house, who is a boy, and she was like, are you two together? And I was so shocked that she would suggest that, because no, we weren't, first of all. And second, she was like jumping the gun on me coming out. So it was like, I didn't even tell you.
She had a clue?
Yeah, she had a clue. She had known forever, and she had been asking for almost forever, but I was always like, no, I'm not gay. Like, no, I'm not gay, Mom. And then, but finally, and I didn't want to say it. Like, it was hard to say gay or homosexual or say any of those words. So instead, I came out as bisexual, which a lot of people do. So I said to her, like, do you know what bisexual is? And she lied and said yes, and she didn't, but she looked it up later and told me about it. And I was like, well, I'm that. And that was just the only way that I could actually verbalize it and say it, because for some reason it was just so hard. You know what it's like when you've got something you got to say to somebody and you just can't get the words to come out of your mouth?
Oh, yes.
It was so hard like that. So lying a little bit about it and saying I was bi, it made me feel like I was still normal enough. Like, well, you know, of course I like girls and that's normal. But also I have this other thing where I like guys too. It made it more normal and more okay. My mom, she was like, we were in the car and she hadn't been driving yet. So we were stopped and, you know, the conversation was stopped. The car was stopped. Everything was just frozen about that moment. It's like, as I remember it, because so much process was going on in her brain. You could see things melting down and smoke starting to come from her ears. She was like, well, this doesn't mean you can be promiscuous. That was her first comment about that.
Ouch.
Like, well, okay. Like, first of all, what are you insinuating? Right? Like, I was not getting any action as a young kid. Like, whatever, 13 or whatever I was. So, you know, good
so
for her for rooting for
me. The rule, because, man, it's scary nowadays.
What do you mean it's scary? Oh, well, being promiscuous for kids?
No, I
for
think
kids?
That... children are having sex at a younger and younger age. I mean, I'll be
oh, come
honest,
on.
I was 18 or maybe even 19 the first time I did, and
wow.
it wasn't a horrible experience, but I was definitely very nervous, and, you know, I mean, wasn't something that I was like actively seeking, but I know there's a lot of
it wasn't something you were actively seeking.
No, I won't give a lot of details, but suffice to say that the young lady was like, yep, this is happening. And I was like, oh, well, okay.
Okay, well.
You know, I mean, it's when you're young and you're inexperienced and you're exploring your body and, you know, you don't really know.
Well, I hope kids are safe and communicate with their parents. I think that would be probably the best thing, is if I had communicated with my mom more, you know, it would have worked out in all my relationships.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of lesser world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created FiendPhone. I'm using FiendPhone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FiendPhone.com, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Meow. Real. Freedom Fiends. Chatting over FiendPhone.
Check it out at FiendPhone.com. And if you went to FreedomFiends.com, you would be able to see the latest episode of Freedom Fiends, which currently is an episode featuring Jim Jesus, a new co-host. I'm so happy to have him on The Fiends. Got to listen to him earlier today with Randy England, the Wampus Cat, and Michael W. Dean. And they were terrific. He doesn't yet have a wrestler name, so still shopping around for those. Any ideas, Chandler?
I don't know, man. I really like his internet name. Jim Jesus is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a good name. And good guy. So I'm looking forward to having him on board as one of the Fiends. And so, yeah, I just told my coming out story. I came out. It was no big deal. You know, the thing that struck me after coming out to my mom, I never clarified, by the way, that I was gay to her. I just always let her believe that I'm bisexual. And I think she just figured out the rest for herself, that I was never bringing any girlfriends home. So she figured it out. But that's anyway, that was my coming out story. But what about coming to liberty? Chandler, what was your coming to liberty story?
A long, slow process.
Was it just a little bit here and there? There was no like, oh, and then I read Atlas Shrugged, and it was like, oh, well, now freedom.
I guess I've always been a liberty-minded individual in the fact that I've always questioned why, right?
That's an important thing to do.
Yeah, like going to Catholic school, there was rules, and you know, with religion, with school, with life, and so many people just accepted it. It's just the way it is. And I always was like, but why? Yeah. Why should I do this? Why should I believe this? Why should I act this way? So I guess it's always been in me. And I think it is with many people. You're kind of born a freedom lover. You know, and then I started listening to conservative talk radio. I think the first... The first guy I heard was a guy out of Boston, Howie Carr, and he's actually kind of funny.
Yeah.
Like if you can get over the whole status thing, he's really funny. He's a kind of a funny guy. And then I started listening to like Rush Limbaugh, and I liked Rush. I listened to him for a while. I couldn't really do the Hannity and the Michael Savage thing. They were just too much for me. And then I started
too
listening
much in
to
what
Glenn.
Sense?
they were just ridiculous.
Okay.
I couldn't get into them. I don't want to speak ill of people, but they weren't my thing. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, well, you're not speaking ill of them. It's just, you know, the type of show that they did or whatever. I don't know.
Yeah.
I just want to know.
And then I got into Glenn Beck, and I really, I'm almost embarrassed to say I was a real big Glenn Beck fan.
Why would you be embarrassed about that?
Because I don't think he's a real Liberty guy.
Oh, well, you know, he might be a good, might be a good guy. Might not.
He's a performer.
Liberty yet. Well, anyway.
Yeah, he's a performer, and he's good at what he does when he doesn't cry all the time, but
I don't know him, you know, but whatever. I see him as a really genuine guy who's just figuring life out, but very publicly.
So, you know, yeah, I guess I could go with
we're
that.
We're all just figuring life out, right? But some of us have more video screens and microphones in front of us, and he's one of those people. So,
yeah,
it's like in a process.
I came across Michael Bodnarik, who I really like.
Oh, yeah.
He's probably, him and Ron Paul are probably my two favorite statists.
He ran for president in 2004 and was arrested for trying to participate.
On our old podcast.
You did? You had Michael Bodnarik on your podcast?
Yeah, well, it was a combination. There was a couple of us that did different podcasts, and we were on Blog Talk, and it sounded horrible. It wasn't like
that. That doesn't count.
But, you know, we had him on, and we got to ask him some questions. He's a really cool guy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I even though he still kind of has some status beliefs, he's a really hip cat.
Yeah.
So I got into him, and, you know, I started reading a lot of Ron Paul and more of the abstract liberty stuff. And then I started talking to some people on the internet, one person in particular who never really called themselves an anarchist, but kind of identified with that sort of philosophy. And then I just got deeper and deeper into it. And what really clenched it for me was I read Boston Tea Party's book, Hologram of Liberty. And
Hologram
after that,
of Liberty. What a cool title. Yeah.
It is, and the subtitle is the Constitution's Shocking Alliance with Big Government. And the premise of the book is that the Constitution was written to impose the sort of slavery that we're under now. It's a very good book, and I would recommend that everyone read it. It's well worth the time. And that pretty much flipped me. And then I started listening to the Freedom Fiends. A friend online recommended them to me. And then I started listening to Michael Dean After Dark. And then I discovered Ben Stone's The Bad Baker, Bad Quaker podcast.
Bad Baker.
And yeah. You know, and then I started reading Murray Rothbard and all that stuff. I had read some Hayek before that.
Did you read Rothbard? Do you like him?
I've only read a couple of books, and I did really like For a New Liberty.
Yeah.
I thought that was a good book.
Man, Economy, and State. Rothbard is one of the economists who I really enjoy reading. I feel like he's just a pleasure. It's so interesting how he's able to write at a level where it's not above or below you. You know, he's talking right to you. And is... it's so hard-hitting in the language that he uses regarding government. His cases are so succinct.
It's hard to argue with him.
Yeah. It's like an indefensible wall that he creates. So anyway, yeah, about how, A Path to Freedom, that's a pretty good path lined with lots of literature. For me, it was the personal experience of being taken from school. So I was in college, and this was after a long period of indoctrination at public government schools, where I thought that, you know, if I just achieve the most that I can, if I take on the most coursework and extracurricular activities, then everything's going to be just great. And then I went to a college where I just realized, oh, this rat race can just continue indefinitely. You know, this promise of like, oh, just do this next thing and you get the next little piece of cheese. And I was like, I want to, you know, get out of this. This is not the right path for me. And I was really depressed at the time. So one of the counselors at the college that I went to, they offered like a free counseling service, free because you pay for it. It's so weird the way colleges will sell you some things, but they're like, yeah, you know, here's like tens of thousands of dollars a year to go to this college, and then here's free counseling. So anyway, I decided if I'm paying all this money, I should go to this. And unfortunately, I really shouldn't have, because I learned the lesson that I cannot trust a mental health professional with the truth. I couldn't be completely honest with my mental health professional, because that person decided to have an ambulance come, police officer pat me down, take a couple of possessions from my pockets, which was like some dough, some cigarettes, and a lighter, and brought me to a mental hospital. And that really was horrible, where I lost all my freedom. And couldn't talk to my friends, couldn't really reach anybody, didn't sign any paperwork, and I was being held against my will. I wasn't allowed to leave. And it was really scary, and I remember my thought just being like, wait a minute, I'm 19. Like, I'm an adult. You can't just take me away. Like, I'm not some kid. I decide what happens with my body. Don't I own my body? And then it was the beginning of the path of me realizing, wait a minute, in this world, in 2015, a boy in Boston, that's where I was going to school at the time, does not own his body. That is the case. I mean, of course, if I had to say that, it wouldn't have made any sense. Like, who could believe that a person doesn't own their own body? But that's what I was experiencing. That was the true reality for me. Like, I was taken away and put into a box that I couldn't get out of. Now, fortunately, I did get a lawyer. We had a judge come to the mental hospital and actually declare that I'm not insane and that I was perfectly fine and should be able to leave. But that all took 16 days. And by the end of it, I was like, hey, lawyer, hey, thanks for helping me get out of here. Do I have some case against these guys? I mean, they can't just take a person against their will. I own myself, right? And he's like, oh, that's an interesting philosophical question, but I don't think it'll go anywhere. And that was the beginning of me being like, well, if this can happen to a little old boy like me, who is no danger to anybody, and they could just be whisked away by agents of the state against their will, I got to do something to stop that. I mean, that can't be the reality that I live in. I gotta change it.
That's a really, I like that. That's a very real introduction into liberty. You know, for me, it was so much more philosophical until the real world hit. You know, until the traffic stops and the taxes and, you know, the fact that you don't own your home, even though your mortgage may be paid, you know, all that stuff. When the real world hit, it just reinforced all the philosophical ramblings that I had, you know, read and listened to. But you you went into it full force, man. That's pretty hardcore. And I know what you mean. I work in the mental health field, and a lot of my philosophical beliefs conflict.
Well, how many of your clients in there say that, I'm not crazy, I don't belong here, you guys should let me out? Because I'm sure that's like all of them. Was me.
No, I mean, you see people that will say that, and then you see people that say, no, I need help. But, you know, the people that say that, sometimes you kind of got to wonder. What we consider societal norms, I don't know, man. They're not all that great sometimes.
Worms. Hey, Redemption in the Third Act, coming up.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms.
Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
With this very special redemption in the third act. So how do we redeem this mother, Chandler?
Well, I don't know, man. You know, I always come back to, we got to deal with what we have, right? We make the best of the system, the world we live in.
Yes.
And to me, you just got to live as free as you can and lead by example. There's no secret formula. There's no big mystery. You just got to do it.
Well, yeah, I think the secret formula is imagine liberty and live like nudgingly closer to that every day.
Yeah. Do what you can to achieve that, even if it's in some minute way every day. And it has to start with yourself. You know, we can pontificate and theorize and do all that all we want, but if you can't embrace these ideas internally and then, you know, reach out to people and it's hard to see progress. But think about where we've come over the last 30 years. We wouldn't have been on the radio 30 years ago talking about this sort of stuff.
I don't know. Why not?
Because it wasn't accepted back then.
I don't know. It wasn't. Yeah, you're right. So, like, a lot of the groundwork that was laid by other anarchists and libertarians, like Rothbard, hadn't been laid yet.
Well, just think about the simple idea of I own me, right? That's still quite...
Isn't that funny that's revolutionary? Like, how dare you suggest that you own yourself, sir? You know, the state can just take you away at will, as they did to me. I was just explaining moments ago, like, you know, yeah, they'll just take your body like it's a piece of livestock. And put it where they see fit. But I have a lot of hope for people moving with their feet. I know you're not a big fan of the migration movement that's happening south of you, but there are 20,000 or so liberty-loving people convening upon the same geographic location and doing that for the purpose of achieving liberty in their lifetime. And I think that is a very exciting project and a worthwhile effort. Of which I am. Yeah,
there's definitely strength in numbers. Yeah. You know, aside from the bureaucratic and technical aspects, you feel better when you are surrounded with like-minded people.
Yeah.
So there's definitely a lot of merit to that. My only thing is, it's not that I'm not a fan. I'm just like, okay, so let's expand that outward. Let's find the people that are on the fence in your town, in your county. And let's talk to them. Let's show them through our actions that there's an alternative. And it's a long process. See, that's the thing. So many people are like, I want it now. You know, when you're a liberty lover and you love freedom and you love to just be free and live happily, you want it now. You don't want to wait, and you shouldn't have to wait. But again, living in the world we live in, making the best of what we have, we have to constantly strive for that and work towards it and take baby steps. It's like any self-improvement, any evolution always comes in baby steps. But you don't, when you take baby steps, you don't take two steps forward and three steps back. You take two steps forward and then you take two more steps forward and then you take two more steps forward. And eventually you reach your destination. And we can get there.
I'm trying to practice a little more of the show don't tell aspect of evangelism. Like we used to sing this song in Christian school. They will know we are Christians by our love. And I always thought that was, even though pretty cheesy, was a nice sentiment. Like, they'll know, you know, people will know you by your fruits, by your actions. And so if you want to spread liberty, spread them with a smile and, you know, share with your friends and neighbors. And then they'll be interested. Like, what's Chandler got that's so special? Oh, he's got liberty.
It's live free, man. There is no live free or die. It's just live free.
I like that. Well, I hope we've helped calm the hamster in your brain this evening. I know it's been instructive for me. I've learned a lot about you, Chandler. Gone some dark places.
Might as well.
But we're back, and the future's going to be bright, man. I can see it.
I can feel it.
Worms.
Worms.
All right, let's get some more Jim Jesus going on this week. Throw him on again. Freedom Fiends.